Hello, everyone, and welcome to Connectivity, episode 269.
Nice.
Thank you. I'm John Reardon, and joining me today, as always, is Neil Ronahan.
Hey, Fox.
Howdy. So, as we've said before, we record on Wednesdays. The episode comes out on Friday. But the Thursday between when we record this episode and when it comes out is the fifth anniversary of one of the most universally praised Nintendo games ever released, Star Fox Zero.
Star Fox Zero might be one of the most important Wii U releases.
I think that's fair, regardless of your opinion of it. I think that's a fair way to phrase it.
Like, I think you can kind of look at it, and maybe this in a way ties into a part of talking about Star Fox Zero, is that, like, this was the final gasp.
Yes. Yes. And I've made this comparison before, but in a similar way, and though I think less successfully, kind of tried to do what Skyward Sword did with Wii, where it sort of tries to be the thing that the system was made to be.
It's if you let me reference the greatest movie of all time, Walk Hard. It is not unlike the final song, A Beautiful Ride, that Dewey Cox puts together. It's the culmination of his entire career into one song.
Yeah, this is much like Skyward Sword is the promise of Wii Sports fully fulfilled. I think this is the promise of Nintendo Land fully fulfilled.
Which, I mean, like, yeah, you kind of look at Wii U from a broad perspective to set the groundwork for Star Fox Zero. It's a system that came out and immediately tanked, pretty much. Like, I guess maybe not. I actually, it's the weird thing is that, like, yes, it did not sell through the roof. Like you could walk into a store and buy it on launch day, if memory serves correctly.
The store that I bought it out at did sell out, which is why I have a white one and not a black one, is because they sold out of the black ones.
Yeah. But, like, the launch numbers, like, I think people were kind of, like, you know, for shits and giggles, when I think, like, PS5 and Series X, which some of their, I guess, like, they still sold really well, but because of the fact there was limited quantity, like, the numbers weren't eye-popping. And I think people, like, comically put up, like, look, the PS5 sold the same amount as the Wii U in its first month. And
right.
It's because, like, every console, unless it's a complete and total failure, like, you have your base audience that's going to come out and show up.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes time. And yeah, there's the base audience, there's supply issues, there's a lot of factors there in the early days.
And Wii U, I mean, it was confusion out of the box in late 2012 when it came out, then kind of going into 2013, that's when Nintendo tried to, you know, set up stuff like Mario Kart 8, Super Mario 3D World, you know, appeal to different fan bases. You know, they did Bayonetta. Bayonetta 2, I don't think came out until 2014, but, like, that was an announcement that was meant to grab at the core base.
All games that didn't really use the hardware.
Yeah, and then they panicked when they didn't have any games in 2013, and the Wii U was basically just a freaking failure because it didn't have any. Turns out HD development is hard, but then you just had the Wii's greatest hits. They were like, how can we salvage this? Let's put out Wii Fit. Let's put out Wii Sports. Let's just do what we did on the last thing. Even Wii Party U, which is just really good.
All of these are good. All of the, I mean, that's it. It wasn't a question of the games not being good, but, you know,
I do think Wii Sports Club kind of, like, I mean, like, boxing's garbage on it.
Sure.
It overcomplicates things that didn't need to be overcomplicated. Although, like, bowling's really good on it still. But bowling on Wii Sports, man. What a good game. But then, like, I mean, then Wii U still failed throughout 2013, despite those Hail Mary attempts. And then 2014 was when you had Smash Brothers come out. And like, that with Amiibo was, you know, supposed to be a bid to kind of salvage it, along with Mario Kart 8, which wound up being the best-selling game on the system. And was so successful that it's
the best-selling game on the next system.
Yeah, and the best-selling game on the next system, which I think says a lot more about Mario Kart 8 than it does about anything about the Wii U, and that, like, that game transcends the console that it was birthed on.
Imagine if they made a good Mario Kart game.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I mean, Tor passed $200 million.
That's fair.
There's a part of me that's really curious, and I don't think we'll ever get these solid answers, is that, like, the development cost, and, well, I guess maybe this is a bad example, because, like, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe are just making money hand over fist. But as far as, like, the proportion for, like, how many resources go into a Mario Kart 8 or even a Fire Emblem or a Dr. Mario game, and comparing that to the amount of cost and spending that goes into having those mobile games and having those mobile games running and the money that they make, like what is the thing that they're getting the better return on investment on? Because I don't totally know that. And I think the way that Nintendo operates, we'll probably never get a clear answer.
No.
Because there's a, like, I mean, Fire Emblem Heroes is likely the most profitable Fire Emblem game of all time, by far.
Right, which isn't the highest bar in the world. Yeah. They've done better recently, but it's not a series known for selling incredible numbers.
Yeah, but it just, I mean, like, because I think, yeah, Fire Emblem Heroes is Nintendo's most successful mobile game that isn't Pokemon Go, or I guess more that it's
well,
the
Pokemon
most successful
Go isn't
game
really theirs.
Yeah,
right.
It's, I mean, like, they have a third of it, I think.
Yeah,
it's, what is it? Pokemon Company has a third, Nintendo has a third, and Niantic has a third of of Pokemon Go, I think.
Yeah,
might even be less than that, because I don't know how it all breaks down. Like, because I know then the Pokemon Company is, like, Creatures Inc. is involved and Game Freak and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but anyway, back to Wii U. Smash Brothers was kind of one of those Hail Marys, but then another thing that was shown off during E3 2014, it was kind of a teaser at the end of a honestly super strong press conference. I think the E3 2014 Nintendo Direct, I guess it wasn't a press conference, this is when they were doing like the digital things and not doing stage events, but that was when they revealed Splatoon. I think that's, they had, like, Mii Fighters, and trying to think of what else was revealed. I think Pac-Man was the year before. Pac-Man might have been E3 2014. Lots of Smash Brothers reveals. They showed off Mario Maker. That was kind of like Mario Maker's coming out party. I mentioned Splatoon. I think, like, Hyrule Warriors was there. Yoshi's Woolly World. Just a lot of really good games at E3 2014. And at the end of that event, there was this teaser of, like, Miyamoto in, like, a side room holding the gamepad. And then there was, like, a blurred screen that was, there was clearly an R-Wing on the screen.
Flying around in an empty field.
Yeah. And I think a couple outlets actually played, or I don't think they played that demo. They saw that demo, which was, it was just an R-Wing flying around. You controlled it with the gamepad.
Yep. I think the motion aiming thing might have been in that demo, if I remember right from those reports, but it was very, even the reporting from the people who played it was very hush hush.
And I think, like, the quotes out of Miyamoto was, like, we're looking for a partner to make a Star Fox game. That E3 2014 was when they had on the floor Project Giant Robot and Project Guard, which were those things that, like, were projects that Miyamoto was working on, and there was Star Wars iconography, at least in Guard.
Star Fox iconography.
Yeah. What did I say?
You said Star Wars.
I mean, it's same difference. Sure. Star Fox iconography on Project Guard, and I don't remember if it was on Project Giant Robot, but it was kind of considered that, like, okay, these are Miyamoto's projects. They're tied into Star Fox. And, you know, like, Project Guard was very similar to what would come out to be Star Fox Guard, or at least laying the groundwork for it, where it was kind of a tower defense that used the gamepad in interesting ways. Project Giant Robot had you flailing around like a weirdo. Well,
Project Giant Robot is Labo Giant
basically.
Robot. Yeah.
Giant Robot functions a lot better than having the gamepad. Like, right. That was such a weird demo.
Right. But I would bet money that lineage is what led to that.
And then, I mean, then that game, that Star Fox game was kind of promised. And as we, you know, Smash Brothers came and went, we got to E3 2015. I don't remember if Nintendo confirmed that Star Fox was going to be there, or if it was just kind of like, well, they teased it last year, it'll show up here.
I don't remember them saying that it was going to be there, because I would have been way more. Yeah, no, they did not say that it was going to be there, because we did a a hype trailer before we went. And I remember we just had a list of things that we thought maybe, who knows. And it was Star Fox, Metroid, and F-Zero were our maybe, who knows, let's tease this.
And
so
two
we
of
did
those,
not have it
confirmed. Two of those were actually there.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I mean, not a bad guess. And we had people in the comment section of that video thinking that we knew things, which was funny because we didn't.
I mean, Star Fox was our safe bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Metroid, honestly, not a safe bet. And I don't think we would have guessed that it was Metroid in the form that it was, which I guess we'll get to in a little bit.
Yeah. So going into E3 2015, the Wii U was pretty much like it was not dead yet, but you saw the end in sight.
I think it would depend on your definition of dead. I think most definitions of dead, it was probably dead. Like there was still a kid poking it with a stick, but it wasn't moving.
And I think at this point, we knew another system was going to happen.
NX rumors. Obviously, NX rumors were definitely floating around.
Nintendo announced that in 2015. I believe it was March that year, because that's when they announced the mobile games. Or was that around the same time?
I don't remember.
Should have looked that one up.
You weren't prepared. I blame you entirely. I will also say that you mentioned Mario Maker in 2014. Mario Maker was playable at this E3. Because besides Star Fox, that was the other big on their show floor. You know, Star Fox Zero was their big thing, and then next to that, their other big thing was Super Mario Maker. This was the E3 where they added the Super to the beginning,
yeah.
Which I to this day have not gotten used to. It's just Mario Maker.
It's Mario Maker 2.
Yep.
Yeah. Like my kids playing Super Mario Maker 2. I'm just saying, kid, you making Mario? And then he makes Luigi large and has him bounce on a brick and falls into a cliff.
I do remember going to work after E3 that year and going into all the pre-orders for Mario Maker and writing Super on the beginning of them and moving them to a different spot in the alphabet, which was very annoying. Like, God damn it.
Why'd you do this to me?
And then having to tell all the employees, like, no, it's Super. You have to put it under S. If you put it under M, people won't find it. Do you find those mobile dates?
Yes. Following the end of the 2014 fiscal year.
Okay.
Which would have been 2015.
Yeah.
It was Iwata, Tatsumi Kimishima, Genyo Takeda, and Shigeru Miyamoto. And they wanted to approach the mobile market. It was kind of a necessity because the company had been flagging for a while, and that's when NX was kind of first mentioned, because I think the thinking was that when they were announcing mobile games, they wanted to be like, hey, like, we're still doing consoles.
Right. We're not abandoning this and going mobile entirely.
And not to get into any kind of sadness with this, but I made sure to confirm this as well. But I know that the mobile announcement, Iwata was a part of it, and it couldn't have been later than 2015 because he passed away about a month after E3 2015 in July.
He showed up in the E3 Direct that year, because that E3 Direct opened with the Star Fox puppets.
Yeah.
I don't remember if he showed up in it in person.
He might have just been the puppet the whole time.
I know Reggie was very prominent in that E3 Direct.
Yeah, because it was also Iwata did not travel for E3 2015.
Yeah.
We didn't know how bad it was at the time. Like, I think at that point we knew that he was dealing with cancer. Mm-hmm. I think the word then was like, oh, he's not doing, he was on the way to recovery. That was what I think was kind of expected and not necessarily like said by Nintendo. And whether that's a little bit of like corporate bravado because they don't want to have shareholders, be like let down by that news. It also might have been some of it in that like Iwata is a very proud man having since last we talked. I guess before then, Ask Iwata, the wonderful book that I highly recommend. You can read my review at NintendoReport.com. Iwata basically didn't like the way that he operated was he didn't think he was going to die. That's kind of, I mean, like, I think that was Miyamoto's reply to Shikisato Itoi, that Itoi references in the book. that like Itoi asked Miyamoto, do you think that Iwata knew this was going to happen? And Miyamoto's reply was that like, no, he thought it was going to have a full recovery.
Yeah. Yeah.
So not to make the Star Fox era talk somber, but it's hard to talk about Nintendo in this certain era without Iwata, and unfortunately without Iwata's death.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pervasive.
But, yeah. E3 2015, which was the last E3 that I went to. I believe it was your first and last, right?
It was. Yeah. I mean, you know, you never know if they last for long enough. Again. I mean, I'll go this year.
Hey, well, so I'll go this year.
There's that.
Yeah, it's free.
But yeah, this was, you know, and I've said this before, but if E3 2015 is the only E3 I ever make it to, I'm glad that's the one I went to, because happening to like stumble into an E3 where you get the once in every other generation announcement of a Star Fox game was good.
Yeah, like this would have been my last, and it would have been my sixth. I went every year from 2009 to 2015, and I think the frustrating thing to me about what E3 turned into, and now whatever it is, you know, unfortunately a lot because of COVID, is that. Mm-hmm. I think E3 2015, from a Nintendo World Report standpoint, I think we really kind of figured out how to tackle E3, and then Nintendo just decided to not make E3 as much of a priority in the future.
Yeah.
Because like that was what we got, an Airbnb that a lot of the staff was at. It really like it gave us more space. It was really, I'll give all the credit in the world to Jared Rosenberg, who is the unsung hero of every E3 that I've ever been to.
The man is insane.
Yeah, he also he picked out the Airbnb that we stayed at, which was a little bit of a haul from the convention center, but it just gave us a place with solid internet for the most part.
He also drove the car. We rented a car and he drove everybody around.
Yeah, and it worked out really nicely. Like I just think it was like I have really fond memories of covering that E3 with everybody. It was a fantastic time. It is. I mean, looking back on it, especially with hindsight, it's not one of Nintendo's strongest E3s. But it's because, to me, they were looking at E3 2014 and were like, let's try to run it back. And they didn't have the strength of Smash Brothers, Splatoon, and the reveal of Mario Maker. Mm-hmm. When this came out, Splatoon was recently released. And the big reveals here were Star Fox Zero, which, as we'll get to in a little bit, wasn't really that well received because of the controls. Some of the other big reveals were Metroid Prime Federation Force, which is a fantastic game that I adore, but I'm not dumb. That is not the way to reveal that game.
This was a great E3 for games that you and I really liked that nobody else did.
Yeah, but like those were kind of your headline announcements were Star Fox Zero, where it was just Federation Force, was, you know, they had more Super Mario Maker, which Super Mario Maker was like electric at
and
this
event. I think it was the first time it was playable, right?
There was a rough demo that I think it might have only been Super Mario Brothers 1 of the Mario Maker demo from E3 2014. But E3 2015 like had the full, I mean, it was months away from release at that point. And it was great. And the other games that were there, they had a TV in the corner showing footage of Xenoblade X.
It was like kind of facing, there's like the stage where they did the Nintendo Treehouse stuff.
Yeah.
And the Xenoblade X TV was like awkwardly tucked so that you almost had to like lean over the stage to see it. Like it was weirdly hidden. There were two TVs, which were usually vacant. With Mario Tennis, whatever, was that Ultra Smash?
Ultra Smash, yeah.
Yeah. And like every time you walked by them, the poor people there would be like, do you guys want to play Mario Tennis? And everyone would be like, nah, man, sorry.
Yeah. And yeah, that was Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival was announced there. Happy Home Designer.
Yeah.
Yo-Kai Watch, which if memory serves, I remember Yo-Kai Watch wasn't on the floor. We asked to play it and I recall someone answering me when I asked, like, oh, could we play Yo-Kai Watch? They were just like, why? I was like, what?
Because that's why we're here.
Yeah, like, I'm that's really curious. Like, Mario and Luigi Paper Jam. It's really, looking at this list, I don't think the games are terrible. Well, at least not all of them.
I will also say that way too many TVs there were still dedicated to Smash Brothers.
Yeah, because that was when they revealed the, I think, the first wave of DLC.
Was it Ryu?
Yeah, I think it was Ryu, Roy, and Lucas.
Yeah, yeah. So that too much of the booth was a game that was already out. The two big things, like we said, were Mario Maker and Star Fox. The Star Fox, I think, was their biggest thing as far as like the line goes.
They had such a baller setup.
Okay, so yeah, the Star Fox had this giant, you know, backdrop with, you know, backlit stars and everything. And you would play the game sitting in an R-Wing with speakers up behind you by your ears, and the TV out in front of you. You had the gamepad in your hand. I don't know if the chair actually rumbled or if it was just the subwoofer under your seat, but like it kind of vibrated while you played, and it was an incredible way to play. The line for it was super long, and I don't know who.
I think you got swag with it too.
So this is actually a point of deep disappointment for me. There was the main Star Fox Zero setup, which you could play through Corneria. And I think maybe Area 3. I don't remember for sure.
I think there were, yeah, I recall there's two playable ones. But while you talk, I will see if I can get any kind of confirmation.
Okay. If you check our YouTube footage, we posted video of both of it. But yeah, so you could play those two levels at the big fancy booth in the R-Wing. Off on the floor, there was another TV, like a few TVs set up that just had the training level. And I said, like, I don't need that. I'm a professional. And so I only played the big main thing. And when you beat that, they would give you a little Star Fox pin. And so I got two of those because they didn't recognize me the second time through. If you went to the one that had training on it, they gave you a Star Fox patch, which I didn't get because I didn't.
You never got the patch?
There. No.
Yeah. So there's Corneria Area 3 and training.
Okay. Yeah. So someday I'll just go on eBay and buy one of those patches, but I feel like I failed in some way in not getting that patch.
That's what I mean. It's the kind of thing where there's some years at E3 where even the swag won't do anything, like E3 2012, which it did not dawn on me at the time, because I was a naive little fanboy. The fact that Nintendo's booth the year that they were releasing a brand new console was consistently empty at E3 2012 was not a cool thing where we got to play the demos all over and over again. No, it was the fact that no one cares. Like, turns out you can get a good idea of what people are interested in by what they gravitate towards at a trade show.
I mean, counterpoint, the Star Fox line went around the booth. It was it was a long line. Somebody on staff realized
swag sometimes works.
Yes, but instantaneously it was long.
Yeah.
But someone on staff realized that there was a press line.
Yeah.
That was minuscule and no one else seemed to know it was there.
I played that demo a lot.
I played this demo over and over and over again.
And keep in mind that this is during the era when no one else was making Nintendo games.
Right.
It's weird talking to people who go to E3, and especially during the Wii U era, people who cover E3 and were like, oh God, I was busy all 3 days. And I'm like, what, you don't have like a day and a half of work and then you just kind of get to screw around for a day?
Like, yeah. What?
Because it would be like I think I remember at E3 2015, like our list of games not at Nintendo's booth that we had to cover was like maybe 10.
Yeah.
Like, it was dark, man.
I remember going over to the Xbox booth to do Rare Replay for a while, just because I didn't have anything else to do.
Oh, yeah. I played Ori guys for the first time that year.
Yeah, that was... I had fun. And I mean, like, they had... like, there was weird stuff, like Federation Force was there, but only Blast Ball.
Yeah.
Which was a weird way, I think, I don't think that did that game any favors.
Yeah.
That was the way they presented it.
We'll hit that up over the summer when we get the 5-year anniversary of Federation Force. But
yeah,
Federation Force is just a case study in how to not market your video game.
Yeah.
Don't set it up so badly that you need your producer to show up on a video to just be like, please, Lord, it's good. I swear.
Yeah.
Poor Tanabe. It's not his fault, I don't think.
Yeah. And it's sad playing like you said, we'll get back to this once it's its anniversary. But I will say it's a little sad to play that game. And if you look at press material for it before it came out and then compare it to the final game, it's clear that like a third of the game was cut. Like they just stopped making it because they were like, oh, nobody wants this. And that's very disappointing. And I will say, and we'll get to some conspiracy theories in a bit, but I think the same thing happened to Star Fox Zero.
Wouldn't be surprised. So yeah. I think we kind of hit on like what it was like at E3. Like mm-hmm. I'm trying to think if there were any other real, like, I don't think we played it at any press events into like, you know, after E3 2015, because it was supposed to come out. It had a release date.
Yes.
I think like November 20th, 2015.
Oh, I know it well.
Yeah.
I was, for anyone who wasn't around then, I was, this was back when we had Let's Plays on the channel, and I was Let's Playing through the entire Star Fox series in preparation for the release of Star Fox Zero, and then it got delayed. And I realized that I was just going to have to keep on doing this for like way longer because I had committed to doing it every week until the game came out. So that was a good time.
Now I remember it was supposed to be the holiday game. That's part of the reason why 2015 was terrible. The holiday mm-hmm. game was Amiibo Festival and Mario Tennis.
God, yes, it was.
Arguably the worst Wii U games that Nintendo put out. But it got delayed. It was set for April 22nd, as it might be, 2016. It was actually during PAX East was when the game came out. I don't know if Nintendo cared that it was. I'm trying to think if they were even at that PAX East or not. Maybe they were. I don't remember. But yeah, so you had the delay, and I think the delay, maybe it was for the best, but I think it really just made it even kind of worse.
So I think we'll talk about our review phase before I get into conspiracy theories, but the delay factors into my conspiracy theories. So look forward to that.
And we never really touched on the fact that Platinum Games, was announced to be the developer of the game, co-developing it with Nintendo. You know, Hideki Kamiya, legendarily, I think even we had an interview with him for the Wonderful 101 where he was just like, I want to make Star Fox.
There's a Star Fox level in Bayonetta 2.
Yeah. Like
it's very clear.
Dude laid down the gauntlet and was like, this is what I would like to do. Still shocked we haven't seen him bring back Murasame Castle. Because that was mm-hmm. the other game that he would always say he wanted to bring back. But yeah, like there was a Star Fox level in Bayonetta 2, and then Platinum was working with EPD on Star Fox Zero. And it's weird because I feel like Star Fox Zero doesn't really give me the feeling of being a Platinum game. It feels like it's a Nintendo mm-hmm. game that Platinum just helped with development. I mean, it feels like a Star Fox game, like through and through. Like there isn't a lot of flourishes here where I'm like, that combo system's totally like Bayonetta. Like
there's almost a suspicious lack of Platinum flavor.
Yeah.
In this game.
And not that it's bad. I mean, as we're going to get to shortly, we both really enjoy this game, even if, you know, it's not flawless. It's not perfect, but it's really fun and it's really good. It nails the basic hook of having interesting, unique controls that make use of the system's features, which is something that I usually like in video games.
But yeah, let's talk about the reviews, because so Neil, you reviewed Star Fox Zero itself. I reviewed Star Fox Guard, and this was during the before times when Nintendo would mail you a disc of the game, as opposed to a download code. In this case, two discs.
Yeah, and two discs, not even with cases, which
no,
that
just
was
like
a rarity.
In little plastic, yeah, garbage cases.
Yeah, yeah, like little like not like the like compact disc, like that size, like, you know, not the typical video game ones. Like it was pretty junky cases that they get sent in. And we got it very early. I think I remember getting it maybe. So the game came out April 22nd. I think I got it at the end of March or early April.
And it had to be early because so you played through Zero and to do your review. And then you mailed both of the games to me.
Yes.
I played through Guard to do my review and also played through Zero to do video stuff for the site. Because this was relatively early on in NWR TV where most of the video content was me or Jared.
Yep.
So
and I think Kurt might have been doing stuff.
Yep. But yeah, so we were mailing games back and forth because it was the olden days. Do you still have did you ever buy a boxed copy of Star Fox Zero?
No,
and
I did
do
not.
Do you still have? Okay, I was going to ask if you still had those.
They are in the same cases.
I should buy you a sealed copy of Star Fox Zero for $5 and demand that you send me the janky review copies of that for the collection.
I mean, like, that's fine. Like, I would agree to that. It's one of those things that, like, every now and then I have seen cheap copies of Star Fox Zero, and I'm like, I should just get this so I have the box.
They literally sold it at Five Below for a long time.
Yeah.
For $5. Yeah. I thought about buying a few more copies just to, you know,
it's
fill
a good
out
game.
The shelf. Yeah.
It's a real good game.
They need loving homes.
So by the time you hear this, my review, I reread it and John cut it to video. So we could throw back to the old days of how things worked. I mailed him my audio.
Yes. On a floppy disk.
Yes. But reading my review, like, I really like this game a lot. And I think the thing that stands out a lot with thinking about this game is that the controls just clicked for both of us. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have this memory of, I don't get how this works. And I understand that, like, it's not a normal control scheme, but for me, it felt very intuitive and natural. Like, it just clicked. Like, that's I can't explain it any more than sat down in that ridiculous R-Wing cockpit at E3 2015, played the demo and was like, I understand this. And then I got the game and I understood it. There's nuance to it. There's depth to it that, like, I think it basically takes a first playthrough to have it all settle in. And then you're just like, you know, moving the gamepad around, like focusing on the screen that you want to focus on and shooting people down, nimbly moving around, shooting down bosses, finding secret paths. It's great.
Well, I think we talked about this a bit when we were talking about Skyward Sword, but I do wonder if it's just that because you and I we weren't coming and going from like the Wii and the Wii U. Like,
yeah,
we were in that ecosystem the whole time. By the time Star Fox Zero came out, we were fine with motion controls. Like, it just wasn't a thing that we had to adapt to. So yeah, no, I would agree that for me, I sat down, I moved the gamepad around to kind of feel the calibration and was like, yep, okay. And it never occurred to me because that's something I'll say about like E3 is because of that, in the environment of something like E3, you're very much in a bubble. Like, oftentimes you don't, like, you can't really even connect to the internet while you're there because you don't have a signal.
Yeah.
So you don't get the internet's perspective on these things that are being announced. And so I remember being like, while we were there, it never occurred to me that people that the type of people who were playing Wii U would struggle with this. I figured, like, this is the perfect game for this audience. And it baffled me when I got out, when I saw that people were like, oh, that doesn't make any sense. I'm like, you guys bought this for Nintendo Land, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, it was the kind of thing where it was a lot of other outlets. I remember didn't enjoy what they played at E3. A lot of people watching it from afar didn't enjoy what they saw. And it was like a rude awakening. Mm-hmm. I would say I had a similar experience with E3 2012 when I realized that nobody liked the Wii U.
Yeah.
but with Star Fox Zero, it's just that, like, once again, it clicked for me. It mm-hmm. it made sense. And it was such a struggle trying to explain it to people. And this was around the time when VR was starting to come out. And I remember talking to people about VR, and I think at this point I hadn't really tried it. I don't think I really tried it until it might have actually been the PAX East that Star Fox Zero came out alongside of that I actually mm-hmm. tried VR for the first time. And it just felt like when people were explaining VR, it was like, no, that's like Star Fox Zero, where it's like that confusing thing of like you're moving your hands in free space while you're also staring at a screen. That's how it felt. And it's the kind of thing that I wonder in that alternate reality where like maybe Nintendo has some kind of VR headset and you play Star Fox Zero in that, like, would that have worked?
Yeah, it is a ready to go VR game. should they ever do that? And I'll say, I mean, I agree with you. It is very VR-esque. The other thing that's a lot like that, where you move like your head and hands kind of independently, is Real Life. And I sometimes struggle to understand how someone could struggle so deeply with using the gamepad like a viewfinder, but manage to like use a phone camera and other things where they have to aim a thing at another thing. But, you know, that's just me.
I do think if there's one thing that, thinking back to Star Fox Zero, and I commented it on my review, I don't think the gyro wing is that great. I feel like maybe it gets into your conspiracy theory. Feels very undercooked.
Yep.
I do think
weird that it's only in 1.5 levels.
Yeah. Yeah, there's basically the introductory level and then like a full level with it.
Similarly, I think the Landmaster is in 1 level.
I think it might be 2.
Titania and... Oh, you can use it in Ficina.
So yeah,
2.
Yeah.
2, yep.
And the way that our wing transforms into the walker, I still love that. And it just makes like, it's just super fun. It's super fun playing that video game and I miss it. I wish more games fell in line with this. I wish we had more Star Fox games. I thought it was a very cool video game. The dog fights were awesome.
Oh yeah.
Like some of the best moments in that game is actually like how intense those dogfights get. It's something that the little bit that I played of Star Wars Squadrons, I'm like, oh yeah, like it's that feeling.
Yep. Yeah. And this is very VR, where it's, you know, you're in all range mode and you're moving your head around, trying to track somebody independently of the direction you're flying. You're looking over your shoulder, to keep track of Wolf or whoever. Like I remember one of the late levels in the game, you're on what's technically Venom, but it's like a little planetoid with like all these trenches going through it, very Star Wars-esque, and you're fighting Star Wolf, and all of them are like going over the planet and then diving into trenches and flying over you and coming down into trenches is to get behind you, and it's a very three-dimensional fight, and just keeping track of all of them while you're doing that is such I would say it is the best Star Wolf fight in the entire series.
Yeah.
Entirely because of the way that game controls. Yeah. It's good.
So it's also I guess do we have anything else to say about the game before we get to conspiracy theory talk?
I can go into conspiracy theory talk whenever you're ready.
Because I think the more that I've been poking around today and like kind of refreshing my memory of Star Fox Zero like discourse, I think I'm on board with your tinfoil hat crap.
Okay, let me just throw in a few nuggets. I was trying to, I have notes somewhere for these. I've gradually been piecing them together over time, and none of this is confirmed. It's purely hearsay. But to start with, when this game was delayed, this is a Platinum Games game known for over the top action and dramatic cinematics and stuff like that. When this game was delayed, there was a comment from Miyamoto, and he said, we're delaying it. And one of the reasons he gave was that he wanted to make the cutscenes more in the traditional tone of Star Fox. Now, anyone who's played Star Fox Zero knows that there are approximately 2 cutscenes.
Yeah, there's basically, it's the intro and the conclusion.
And the outro, yes.
Yeah.
So either it is the case that those 2 cutscenes were wildly different originally, or there were a lot more cutscenes that were maybe replaced by very quick, like mid-level dialogue. Supporting this would be the fact that at the end of the game, and at the beginning of the game, you get these full body character shots of all the characters. Very nice models that are rendered in engine, which would be a kind of weird thing to do if you were never going to use those other than those two cutscenes. You'd probably just do a nice pre-rendered thing rather than getting all the fur and everything working in engine.
Yeah.
During the opening cutscene, you see them in the interior of the Great Fox, which is a very detailed model, which is used for one shot and never seen again. it's things like that that you would not do it in that way if your plan was to use this stuff once. Then you have stuff like Star Fox The Battle Begins, which was a short anime that came out prior to launch, that A, has a very different tone from Star Fox Zero. I wonder why. And also, at the end of that anime, presents General Pepper talking to Peppy about the portal device that Andross uses as if it's a deep, dark conspiracy that no one can ever know about, and that Peppy has to, quote, do what must be done. And in Star Fox Zero, it's revealed as, yeah, we made a portal, Andross helped.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's revealed during this awkward moment of your ship just staying still while Pepper monologues to you.
Yep.
As opposed to maybe like a real cutscene.
Yeah. Yeah, the ones that Miyamoto wanted to fix.
Yep. So I would say that I think the reason that you don't notice a lot of that platinum pizzazz in this game is because it was all cut out. Once they realized that this game wasn't being received well, and they didn't want to put that time and money into them. And so all of that stuff was cut from the game.
And it's even thinking about from when Platinum came on board, mm-hmm. before then, like that, like I came across some kind of like comments and notes, peppered throughout the, like the Miyamoto's interviews about Star Fox from E3 2014, when he talks about what he wants out of what would become Star Fox Zero.
How it's all about complex character drama.
Well, I mean, it's about how it's like all of his inspiration from it, at least from Miyamoto's side, was from the show Thunderbirds.
Mm-hmm.
And that about how he wanted the game to be structured episodically. Mm-hmm. The whole concept of having primetime programming where you'd have your typical Star Fox gameplay and then like the weird, quirky, you know, like inter-episode things like Star Fox Guard or Project mm-hmm. Guard. And then like stuff about like going from R-Wing to Landmaster in the middle of a level. Like that was mm-hmm. another thing that he commented on. And a lot of those can be kind of written away by the fact that
happens twice in the entire game, switching vehicles mid-level.
Yeah. Yeah, because what, this is a gyro wing, and then
the gyro wing, and
the first time you see the Landmaster.
The Landmaster on Ficina. Yep.
Yeah. And some of the stuff that Miyamoto said in E3 2014 could be kind of tied into like the game is not fully formed, but sure. You know, as it kind of develops, like there's ideas that were kind of publicly stated as what he saw the Star Fox game being that kind of didn't really come true. And after the delay, which I think the delay was in September, I think, of 2015 mm-hmm. was when the delay happened. It was March in 2016 where I think I don't know if the April 20th or the April 22nd date was already out in the open, but in early March, there was a Nintendo Direct where they announced that Star Fox Guard was a thing coming out alongside the game. Mm-hmm. We had not heard about Star Fox Guard being, an individual game or anything up until March 2016. So that does kind of say that like that could have been after the delay, they tweak things. Maybe there is something that changed more. Maybe the scope narrowed down because Nintendo realized that no matter what they did with this video game, the Wii U was dead and they had to look towards the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think so there is some other evidence in the game of the game having been shortened. In Corneria, if you use the walker and go to the alternate boss, the Aqua Rosa. I don't remember exactly what it's called, but it's the alternate boss when he's underwater. And to get to him, Fox goes through a portal. And two very important things happens when Fox goes through that portal. A, it's suddenly sunset, where previously it was noon. And B, Fox references the portal as having been just like the one he saw at the colony, which hasn't happened yet. So here's the thing. The sunset thing, when you go back to Corneria later in the game, it's sunset. I don't think that boss was originally from that level. I think that boss was originally the boss for when you return to Corneria, and I don't think that return was originally when you went to fight Andross. I think that they cut it short and made, like, threw in the Gigarilla and then just said, okay, Andross. And then made that Aquarosa fight the alternate boss for Corneria. And that would also explain why Fox references a level he hadn't been to yet, because he would have been to it if that boss was the second time you went to Corneria.
Yeah.
So that, I think that game was cut down. I think it was longer. I don't know if it was originally, like, the other thing that I think people have complained about is that the branching paths are very inconsistent in what levels have them and how many of them there are. It's not quite as freeform as Star Fox 64.
Yeah, if memory serves, that like there's basically like four levels that you have to play a buttload to get all the different exits.
And I kind of wonder if originally there weren't so many branching paths and it was more a linear game like Star Fox Assault. Because if they were going to be doing complex cutscenes, that would work a lot better, which was something that Star Fox Assault did.
Yeah. Star Fox Assault story, like, kind of solid.
Yeah, it's great.
Maybe the best in the series.
So I feel very comfortable in saying this is a game that had most of its plot ripped out of it. And I think that's supported. And I also think this is a game that is significantly shorter than it was planned to be, which I think is supported both by weird inconsistencies in dialogue and time of day and scenes, along with, like you mentioned, Guard may very well have been part of the game originally, as opposed to a separate mini thing. That may have been something where they just said, we have to salvage this. We can salvage this bonus thing into its own little game. I don't know why they printed it on its own disc, but cool. Yeah, that seems like something they may have done.
I do love also that Nintendo does not view Star Fox Zero as a prequel or a sequel to any Star Fox game.
I guess they've never heard the word reimagining or remake. Like, I mean, I can tell you what it is. Like,
I mean, what would have been better if it was basically like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek?
Yeah.
Where you go back in time through one of the portals. Like, that's it almost, once again, and to kind of going into your theory, it seems like that might have been what they were playing with.
Yeah, that feel it.
You have those portals.
Yep.
It's there.
Let's give an example within Nintendo's own line. Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. Like, you think it's going to be Star Fox 64, but then it's not. And that feels like where that game maybe wanted to go, and then they got scurred and figured that, and in their defense, what had people been asking for since Star Fox 64 was, why can't you just make more stuff like Star Fox 64? So that's exactly what they did.
Yeah,
they made stuff really like Star Fox 64.
Yeah, and then people didn't want that. It
reminds what people me want of- is Star Fox Assault. The Star Fox game you want is Star Fox Assault.
I mean, it's really true, and it's the kind of thing where I have really fond memories of Assault. The multiplayer is legit. Yes.
Oh, the multiplayer is incredible.
I do think that, like, while I do like what they do with the story, like, I don't love the handling of it still. Like as far as like the way you go from, you know, vehicle to on foot, it's clumsy. It's not bad, but like every other game in the series basically feels better to control than Star Fox Assault, which sucks because I think that Assault might be the one that tries to do the most new things this side of Star Fox 2.
Yeah. Assault is probably the one that in retrospect we should have supported much more if we wanted more interesting Star Fox.
Which also came out late on a relatively failed system.
Yes, that's where Star Fox games, the lucky ones make it out. The unlucky ones become Star Fox 2, and it takes 20 years for them to come out. But that's their sweet spot.
I think what we need to do is we need to find Yusuke Hashimoto, who was the director at Platinum on Star Fox Zero. He left Platinum back in 2019. We need to go hang out with him because of Star Fox Zero. Yeah, no, actually, I think he worked on Nier and then left or something. I forget what his story is.
I think that's right, because I remember at work wanting to put some marketing on Nier that said from the director of Star Fox Zero. And nobody would let me.
Yeah. Hashimoto was a big deal at Platinum and he left, but he might hold the secrets that we need to know.
Was he the one that did Astral Chain? I thought that was one of the Nier guys.
No. Okay. No, I think Tara is Tara or Taro. I'm not up to date on all of my Platinum games, folks.
Yeah. I know that Astral Chain had a lot of the
He Nier. Might have been the Nier guy.
Yeah.
I wanted to see who the director of Platinum was, and it's Hashimoto, who was also the director on Bayonetta 2. So, busy guy.
Yeah.
And he lists on his Twitter profile that he was a producer on Bayonetta, director on Bayonetta 2, and director on Zero. If he did Automata, then he would have definitely put it on his Twitter profile.
I like to think he's just more proud of Star Fox Zero.
Maybe. I mean, aren't we all?
I mean, I think it's safe to say that everyone pretty universally prefers Zero over Nier, right? I mean, that's... kind of just a given at this point.
I can't even really. I've heard that game's fantastic.
I have too. I've downloaded it on multiple platforms, yes, multiple times, yep, and I've never played it.
You know what? When there's like a million games that people tell you that you have to play, it gets real taunting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just wind up playing Picross and Star Fox again.
When I remember reviewing Astral Chain and knowing that it was from a bunch of the Nier dudes and being like, I really like this. I should probably play Nier. I'll never play Nier. But let's to kind of wrap things up. Obviously the Switch has most Wii U games. Star Fox Zero sort of famously at this point is not on there. It's debated, you know, is it good enough to be on there? Is it possible to port at all? So I guess to wrap this up, the final question would be, A, should Star Fox Zero be on Switch? And B, would it work? And if so, how? And I think I'll let you start because I'm hosting, so I can do that.
Yeah. And I think you're going to have a more well thought out answer than me, because my answer is, I mean, one, I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze, as much as I would love to see them try to work Star Fox Zero out on Switch. I also think it wouldn't work that well. Like part of the thing is that I always saw people being with Star Fox Zero like, oh, just give me a game with traditional controls. But the problem is that Star Fox Zero is completely fundamentally designed over the unique control scheme of using the gamepad in tandem with the TV. That's not to say like something like Skyward Sword, another game that was completely developed around its method of control and is now being, you know, rejiggered for Switch, which, you know, kind of time will tell to see how well that holds up. I have a feeling the button controls in that game might be hot garbage, but we'll find out. I think it's just by the nature of the two screens, Star Fox Zero, like, I just don't think it can really work. You could do picture in picture, but I think that's just like, especially on handheld, that'd be a nightmare. I think my future, my hope against hope, because I'll be real. The darling from Wii U that I worry is lost to time is Nintendo Land. Star Fox Zero, I had fun with it. You can stay on Wii U, I don't care. I want Nintendo Land to live forever.
Though Nintendo Land seems even harder to port to Switch.
I think my statement on Star Fox Zero and Nintendo Land on Switch is no, it cannot happen. What my hope amongst hopes is that I've settled on, after playing 3DS a little bit in the past couple weeks, my kids started liking to open up Mario Golf and run around in like the castle mode. I missed, I think, two screens of the future. We have we have gone back in time. We got rid of two screens, but we need them back.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe the future successor to the Switch, when it happens in 5 years or whatever, because I do think we're going to have, I mean, it's we're going to see stuff like the Switch Pro show up, but this the platform that is the Switch will not fundamentally change in a major way for a long time in my eyes. I don't think Nintendo's pulling our leg when they say we're halfway through its lifespan.
Oh yeah, well at the current sell rate for it, I mean, even halfway might be.
Yeah. Like,
until it starts to decline, it's really hard to figure out what the half-life of the system is. We have no data yet to draw that from.
But I'll quit beating around the bush. I think that Nintendo's Switch 2 will be basically a system that is backwards compatible with the Switch and also adds two-screen functionality. Because I think that like stuff like Star Fox Zero and Nintendo Land, and not that Nintendo's goal is to make sure they can future-proof their games, because it would also allow DS and 3DS games to more easily come to the platform. I also think that like that two-screen setup is just, it's better.
Yeah.
And I think that might be, that. Obviously, I expect Nintendo to do something cooler than just like, we just gave the thing two screens.
It would be really satisfying to see them essentially make the Wii U work.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what form that will totally take. Like, hell, I just take, give me a clamshell Switch. That's like, oh, that'd be great. And I mean, it could be something where maybe it is the console that it docks, but you can also use the tablet as a screen that pairs up with the TV. Like, do something like that. I don't know what it is. Nintendo, you're the wizards. You do your R&D work, figure it out.
You make literally an inverse Wii U.
Yeah.
Where the guts are in the controller, but they're streaming lag-free to your TV.
Yeah.
And that, yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to look to just see what other Wii U games we haven't gotten that are...
Devil's Third.
Well.
And Xenoblade X.
Yeah. I mean,
I think Xenoblade X is like the one where it's like, surely they're doing that, right?
Yeah.
I assume that was an expensive game to make, and while I think it did well for a Wii U game, I can't imagine they wouldn't want some more money out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think Xenoblade X could happen, and I mean, like, looking at some other things, like, yeah, we're probably not going to see Game & Wario be ported to Switch, although, God, now that I just
bad.
Said that.
Now, I kind of like said that,
and guess what's going to show up at the next, at E3, yep. Nintendo's going to be like, guess what, guys? We're running it back.
Yeah.
Game & Wario's getting ported. We could make a new WarioWare, but fuck you. Not that Game & Wario isn't terrible, it's
Game & Wario.
The problem with Game & Wario is that it was the only Nintendo game that came out in the first half of 2013. That is the problem with Game & Wario. Other than that, totally fine.
Yeah.
If that was like one game amongst six others over the course of 6 months, totally fine.
So I will say that I think I agree with you that it might not be worth it to Nintendo to port this. Because while I think it's a very good game, I don't know that they can turn around the perception of it to a degree that would make it worth porting. They would have to do a lot. But I will say that, and I've fluctuated on this a bit over time, that I don't think it would be as impossible to port to Switch as I initially thought. Because the thing about when you're actually playing this game is you hit the minus button and the screens flip and you get your cockpit view on the TV and you get your third person view on the gamepad. And so if you've ever played Star Fox Zero just on the gamepad, like that's how you play it. So I think that that's a viable way to play it. It would make playing handheld work perfectly. And when you're playing on the TV, you could use the gyro controls in your Pro Controller. And I think that would work reasonably well. Yeah, the answer to porting it is not to make one that controls normally, because like you said, even if they tried to do something with like Skyward Sword, where they're remapping it to work on a standard controller, Skyward Sword, you can only do that because they had an extra stick left over they weren't using. For one thing, Star Fox Zero uses both sticks, but the control they would have to give you would be a free look, which I don't see working well on a stick, because I I play a lot of space sims and they tend to have free look options and they pretty much always feel bad outside of playing in VR with some sort of motion control. So I think you could do it with motion controls on one screen, just with screen flipping. And I think that would be fine. But I just can't imagine it's worth it to them financially to do it as much as I would love it if they did.
This is like this conversation of like adapting weird control schemes to Switch. I'm fascinated on if Skyward Sword's going to work.
Skyward Sword will be a very interesting proof of concept. If Skyward Sword works, then I think we'll see more of this. Because that is something where the like if you just break down the inputs of the Wii versus the Switch, you're going to wind up with that extra analog stick every time.
Yeah.
And so if you have some if you need to map something to it, you can. And of course, you do still have motion controls. They're just they're gyro based as opposed to having that IR sensor, which helps them calibrate. But yeah, no, it'll be an interesting proof of concept to see if this is a viable thing we can do.
Yeah, but until
still won't get Mario Galaxy 2. But
yeah, I mean, maybe. Well, then what they'll do is they'll release Mario Galaxy 2 for $60, and then people will be very mad.
And then they'll buy it.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do. But I think that will wrap up our Star Fox Zero 5th anniversary episode. Thank you very much for listening. Neil, thank you for being here and being the only other fan of this game.
It's weird because, like, I mean, your reputation precedes you. You're the Star Fox guy. But it's also like, well, I don't hold it in quite as high esteem as you do. Like, I enjoy all the games of the series. Like, I don't, even adventures, which I think kind of sucks. Like, I don't hate, like, I've played through that game. I don't hate it. I think it's got some issues, but like, I wish I liked it more than I do. And it also helps that I got Star Fox Assault when it came out. I was looking forward to that. I think it was like Valentine's Day when I was in high school. Obviously, was I single then? Actually, I might've been dating someone. Came out, so I was just like, I celebrated Valentine's Day. No, I was dating somebody and ignored them and played Star Fox. So, needless to say, that relationship did not last that long. But I have the memories of playing Star Fox Assault, so I win.
I will say that when Star Fox Assault came out, I was I don't know what grade I was in. I'm not going to do the math, but me and my brother were both still being homeschooled. And so we did an extra day of school the day before so that we could have the day off of school and then just played that game all day. And I think played all the way through it in a single day.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have been a junior in high school when that game came out.
So I don't know how much younger I am than you, but
I think you got 4 or 5 years.
Let's say I was in junior high.
Yeah, that makes
somewhere
sense.
Somewhere in
there.
But yeah.
Yeah, I like Star Fox Zero. Me too. Like that game a lot. Reflecting on my review, I feel the same way that I do. Like it hasn't changed, and I haven't wavered.
Yeah.
It's not like Skyward Sword where I'm like, oh, I dread replaying it because what if I don't like it as much? Like, no, I'm pretty confident in how I feel about Star Fox Zero, and it's a kind of game like Kid Icarus Uprising that I understand why maybe if the controls don't work for you, that game's not going to work. I don't think the controls, like, I think the controls in Star Fox Zero are way better than the ones in Kid Icarus Uprising. Like, the Kid Icarus Uprisings are preposterous, but I like them.
Oh, I love Kid Icarus Uprising.
Yeah.
But I don't play it with those controls.
Yeah.
I cheat.
but yeah, I'd hope Star Fox comes back, and I hope it's a success. I feel like that series deserves it.
Yep. They just need the boldness to stop making the first one repeatedly.
Yeah.
Well, all right. If you have any fun listener mail, we tried to give you a contest last. Do you want to extend that contest or start a new one until we get enough people?
Yeah.
To mail
send
us
in your listener
we did
mail.
Get one.
We got one.
We'll save it for next time. We'll save because it wasn't Star Fox related.
Yeah. I think, we actually have some like plans and schedules for the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
Check out if Matt Zawadniak, if you listen to this, hit me up if you want to talk about Mega 10-3. when we get closer to when that game comes out. Check out his previews on the YouTube. It looks no, I'm not going to say it looks great, because it looks like it's a really crappy port. But it's cool that that game's going to be playable in a Nintendo system.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, email us at connectivity at nintendoworldreport.com. And this week,
honestly,
let's
with
say,
anything.
Yeah. what, you know what? As soon as we get a week where we get 5 listener mails from different people in the same week, we will give away a code for a game. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay, that'll be our plan. So just keep emailing, get some friends, have them listen, have them send in things, and we'll make that happen. Review us on whatever your podcast listening thing of choice is. That helps us in various algorithms everywhere. And you can also follow us on Twitter, which I believe is Connectivity NWR.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Great. Yeah,
you
do that.
Got it.
And we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.